The Green Bay Packers went from the highest of highs after a game-tying Hail Mary to the lowest of lows after an overtime loss to the Arizona Cardinals in the divisional round of the playoffs. The season is over, but we're just getting started. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Welcome to Railbird Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caribou. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're looking back at a loss in the divisional round of the playoffs to the Arizona Cardinals. Perhaps not a good morning, as I usually say after a loss. I'm sorry that we have to do this, but consider this your therapy session. It's just my unfiltered thoughts today, no guests on the show, but there's some things we got to go through after the end of the season. It comes to a close after a season of up and downs. It's amazing. It's this season, perhaps more than any other, had a better record, and yet you still felt like, I don't know, you felt like the Packers had a losing record almost. Nothing seemed to, you know, really inspire confidence in the team this season, in that you knew that they could get the job done. I mean, they certainly did well toward the end. The win over Washington in the wild card round was great. That was fun. That was good. And they gave an inspired effort in the divisional round, had a chance to win. That was good. Was it too little too late? I mean, the season as a whole certainly didn't, you know, say, hey, we're going to win the Super Bowl, but we're going to take a look back at this game. And as usual, our roadmap for doing so, at least to begin with, will be the Chips Report published at 24/7 Sports in the aftermath of the game, where we go through our blue chips, our red chips, and our cow chips, some of the best and the worst players from a divisional round loss in the playoffs. So, starting with your blue chip players, Jeff Janison. Got a whole slew of thoughts about Jeff Janison this game, and we'll get to the other blue chipper in a moment. But Jeff Janis catches a team high 107 receptions, first of all, for 145 yards. And consider it the best game of Jeff Janis's young career. I think today, here we sit on a Monday morning, and Football Nation, fans nationwide are trying to figure out who the heck is Jeff Janis. This guy has two catches coming into the game, and all of a sudden he's leading the team 145 yards. They're probably really scratching their head on the Packers' final drive of regulation. Somehow Jeff Janis had 101 yards in one drive. That might be an NFL record. I'm sure not. I still don't know if anybody's figured that out yet. Is that an actual record? I mean, there's only 100 yards on the football field, and yet here Jeff Janis had 101, albeit because the Packers were pushed back by penalty. I believe that was a legal motion penalty there by Richard Rodgers that pushed him back at the time. Jeff Janis is, of course, going to get all the attention for that, what happened on the final drive there. First of all, hauling in the 60-yard reception on, it was 4th and 20. You could certainly argue the play before that pass interference should have been called against Jeff Janis. And there could definitely be a legitimate, argument made for doing so. It's tough because, at the time, I'm not sure I felt it. And then you watch it in instant replay in slow motion. I'm like, well, that looks pretty bad. But when you see it in real time, I wasn't convinced. But I mean, you're looking at it from an angle that's far away too. You know, maybe if I was the referee, I'd change my mind. It ends up being a moot point when Janis catches the next pass for 60 yards. A hope and a prayer, really, because, I mean, not often that you convert 4th and 20 and the Packers do so in dramatic fashion. Jeff Janis going up to catch it. Boy, he sure knows how to high point a football, a point evidenced by the next play, or did, I guess it's not the next play, but a few plays later, ends up, you know, the Packers have just 5 seconds left on the clock or whatever it is, and they know they got to go to the end zone. This is it. And so what made this play remarkable, actually, and maybe the first time I've ever seen this on a Hail Mary attempt in football history, you know, at least games that I've watched, the Cardinals brought so much pressure under Aaron Rodgers. They kind of went against the conventional wisdom in that you put all these guys back in the end zone in hopes that they can bat the ball down or intercept it or whatever. But instead, they brought the heat, and you almost thought for a second Aaron Rodgers is not even going to be able to get this ball off. Obviously, he would like to, if possible, roll to the right. That way he doesn't have to square his shoulders. They're already squared for the most part. But instead, they force him to go to the left, just ends up getting the ball off, and has to do so while he's under pressure. He barely even has time to see down the field. He probably could see Jeff Janis over the corner of his eye. And Janis goes up over Patrick Peterson, one of the best cornerbacks in the entire NFL, you know, grabs the game-tying touchdown. It's just an amazing play. Again, the ability of Jeff Janis to go up in high point of football, something that's really remarkable and just amazing. And it wasn't just that throughout the game. I mean, he ends up having 7 catches. You know, several of them I know came in the fourth quarter as the Packers were going on a long drive, and he's converting first downs. He actually caught one of the back shoulder passes, one of those passes that Davante Adams has struggled so much to catch over the course of the season. There's Jeff Janis when the stakes are at the highest, when the chips are down, there he is making the back shoulder throw. And it's a fantastic, fantastic game from Jeff Janis. And it makes you wonder, where was this all year? This is something we've talked about on the show. This isn't the rest of the nation is wondering why today, you know, why. But Packers Nation, those people who have watched this team, from preseason to postseason, and you live and die with the fortunes of the Green Bay Packers, you've seen this hinted. You've seen Jeff Janis take 12 receptions during 2 years of preseason football and turn 12 of those receptions, 5 of the 12 into touchdowns. You're like, this guy is dangerous. You've seen him on kick returns this year. Jeff Janis's 29.0 yards per return average would have ranked 3rd in the NFL this season had he had enough attempts. This guy is talented. It is undeniable talent. And you see with him, a lot of times there are, you know, some unrefined route running, understandably, coming from the small college, learning a complex offense. There are many times over the course of the season, including on Saturday evening, in which you're like, Jeff Janis can run a better route. And in fact, he did on there was the one, you know, incomplete pass from Aaron Rodgers to Jeff Janis in the end zone earlier in the game that, basically Aaron Rodgers thought he would have flattened out his route a little bit, and he didn't. He kind of ended up taking a little bit deeper angle, and the two just weren't on the same page. And you know, that's something that probably does come from a lack of practice time together to an extent. Most of the time, Jeff Janis was not among the top wide receivers. He certainly, you know, probably gets less practice time with Aaron Rodgers than a lot of wide receivers on the roster, not to say that they don't get any time together. But we've seen this happen time and time again throughout the year where, Jeff Janis flashes talent, and then the Packers, you know, kind of refuse. I thought, and if you read an article published by myself, a column on Sunday, and, you know, after the loss, I kind of went back and pointed out two examples in particular, things that, you know, again, we've addressed on the show, but it's now weeks ago, even months ago. The first one came back during week two against the Kansas City Chiefs. But both these instances I'm going to reference, Jeff Janis was targeted in the first quarter of each of these games on deeply thrown footballs. The first one, week three against the Kansas City Chiefs, it's about a 20-yard pass down the sideline. Not super long, but I mean, you know, 20 yards downfield. It's a pretty deep, you know, fairly deep at mid-range, we'll say. The second one, week 13, I believe it was against the Detroit Lions. This one's, you know, double the amount of length. This is a 40 or so yard pass downfield, both down the left sideline, both coming in the first quarter of these games in which, you know, they're going to give it a shot. They're going to take a deep shot to Jeff Janis. Well, they fall incomplete, and it's a little bit of an argument on each of these in that Jeff Janis could have, you know, ran a better route, could have gave the quarterback a better chance of completing the football. But it's almost as if at that point, when those happen, the Green Bay Packers said, you had your chance, you blew it. And he never gets another chance again, never gets a chance to settle into the game or anything like that. And that, to me, was the most frustrating part of their dealing with Jeff Janis, is like he's not even given it. The shots that he get, they're like 50-50 shots way downfield, in which even if it was Jordy Nelson running this route, there's a 50 chance, probably less than 50% chance these deep balls are completed. This wasn't just some little slant route or something that's easily completable, albeit you can argue that, you know, a lot of downfield throws from Aaron Rodgers are a lot more completable than a lot of quarterbacks. But still, I mean, I thought that was very often unfair to Jeff Janis, in which he gets these deep throws downfield and it's just they're incomplete. And that's it. That's it. You know, that's over. You had your chance. You're not getting another one again. When we see on this past Saturday, you know, all of a sudden Jeff Janis gets a chance to settle into the game, and he looks like the best wide receiver the Packers have on their roster. It's frustrating to me because you've seen the talent out there, and you just think the Packers did very little to try to get the football in his hands. You understand he's young. He doesn't understand the route concepts as good as some players. You know, I thought there was kind of an inability by the coaching staff to simplify things for him, or, you know, I don't know, just like, okay, you're not going to play Jeff Janis. Let's figure out ways we can get the football in his hands a few times a game, plays in which they can practice over and over throughout the course of the week. Here's five simple plays we're going to practice 10 times a day for, you know, three straight practices. So, he's going to know exactly what to do on these plays. I mean, I think that's what you do if you got a player who's young, who's inexperienced, who, you know, I don't know Jeff Janis's mental capability. I talked to him for a few minutes, I believe, at the NFL Combine. That's the end of my interaction with him. I'm not there covering the team every day. I wish I was, but I'm not. It doesn't matter. It's, you know, I've seen enough interviews to know that Jeff Janis is not, you know, a complete dolt. I think he can handle some things. And, you know, after 2 years of preparation, it's only more so to that point. I probably belabored it now. It's unfortunate that, you know, Jeff Janis has the biggest game of his career. And I would have thought that throughout the course of the season, he was capable of a whole lot more than two receptions the whole entire season. So that is your one blue chip performer. The other blue chip safety, Clinton Dix. Obviously the interception is what he's going to be remembered for from this game. And what a great interception it was, coming over from, you know, his responsibilities in the middle of the field, to, again, high point the football, making a leaping grab right along the sidelines, getting those feet down in bounds. It was, and you know, was replayed and held up. It was, ended up being an interception for Clinton Dix. And, you know, it was because of that the Packers won the turnover battle. It, you know, it's so rare in the NFL when you win the turnover battle and lose the football game. That's what happened. But, you know, no fault of Ha Ha Clinton Dix. He did his part in this game. Not only that, I remember, you know, it was right at the end of the first half. He broke up a pass over the middle intended for Michael Floyd on the final Cardinals possession of the first half. Had several nice tackles throughout the game. But you know, what's interesting here is that this was Ha Ha Clinton Dix's third interception in four postseason games. He's only played in four over the course of his whole career now, two each season, 2014, 2015 seasons. I know it's 2016 now. And that equals the total. Those three interceptions equal, you know, what he has in 32 career regular season games. Yeah, two full seasons. He hasn't missed a game, which is great. That's Ha Ha Clinton Dix has proved he's, you know, the type of player that's not injury prone. He's out there every week, which is great. That's what you want out of a first round draft pick, any round draft pick. He's out there. He's available. But I mean, why is it that he's, you know, playing out of his mind in the playoffs and makes this beautiful interception, but they're not coming in the regular season? You want to see that more consistently. Maybe it's, you know, he's young. Yeah, he's, and you look at other safeties the Packers have had throughout their time, Leroy Butler, Darren Sharper, Nick Collins. They all kind of just, you know, they got off the slow starts in their career and got gradually better as time went on. And you think maybe that's going to be the same here with Clinton Dix. And hopefully it is. I thought, you know, maybe that would have been the case after last season's NFC Championship game when he came away with two interceptions there. But, you know, good job, Ha Ha Clinton Dix. Might have been the best player on the Packers defense on Sunday. You know, the defense as a whole does a good job. It breaks down, of course, at the end on the, you know, the 70-yard reception to Larry Fitzgerald. But anyway, Clinton Dix has a good game. Your red chip performers, Aaron Rodgers. I've already kind of talked about Aaron Rodgers quite a bit in the breakdown of Jeff Janis. I thought, you know, in particular, the what he was able to do on that last drive of the game. Here's a guy who's, you know, kind of been criticized in that he so rarely has made the fourth quarter comebacks or anything. I realize they couldn't, they could have went for two at the end. Perhaps that's another discussion that we could have. But regardless, I mean, Aaron Rodgers gives this team a chance to win the football game. Takes them the length of the field, you know, throws two beautiful footballs to Jeff Janis. I mean, yeah, they were kind of hopes and a prayer, but I mean, that's that was the hand that Aaron Rodgers was dealt, and he made the best of it, and he did it. And you can argue that the Packers were without their top four wide receivers on the depth chart. You know, when you're without that, I mean, what does that say about Aaron Rodgers working with the fifth, sixth, seventh guys on the depth chart, basically? You know, I'm going back to the beginning of the season. You lose Jordy Nelson, you lose Ty Montgomery, you lose Davante Adams, and now in the middle of the game, you lose Randall Cobb. You're down to Jeff Janis, James Jones, and Jared Aberderis. And, you know, James Jones is taken out of the game by Patrick Peterson, basically. And yeah, Aaron Rodgers certainly, he got lucky there on the what would have been a pick six by Patrick Peterson, trying to throw the ball to James Jones against Patrick Peterson. Kind of looked like it was one of those back shoulder throws and a poor choice. And Aaron Rodgers gets lucky because it's nullified by penalty, the hands to the face penalty against Brian Bulaga, the man he's blocking, and it comes back and gets another chance. And there were several times Aaron Rodgers, certainly it wasn't the best game of his career, but when you're working without your top four wide receivers, when you are faced, to come back at the end and you do it. And for him, you know, just the Hail Mary itself, in which he's got to elude the pass rush, barely has time to set his feet to throw the ball downfield and heave it in a perfect position for Jeff Janis to catch it. That was great. Red chip performance. Wasn't great performance. It was a good, very good performance from Aaron Rodgers. Your other, Sam Shields. And I got a lot of thoughts about Sam Shields here, because a lot of people are going to be mad that he dropped a couple interceptions. And certainly that frustration is understandable. You wish Sam Shields had caught these interceptions. If he catches just one of these, it's probably the difference between winning and losing for the Green Bay Packers. It could basically clinch the game, give them an extra possession. Understandably, you regret that. But you can't expect defensive backs to be making these plays. You can expect wide receivers to make catches. When they drop the ball, it's one thing. When a defensive back drops the ball, it's another. They don't go into play expecting to catch the football. Why? Because so often when they got to, you know, go in coverage, their backs are turned. They don't have eyes in the back of their head to see the quarterback, and they don't know which way the wide receiver is going to break. They have to react or guess. And all of a sudden, they do turn around. The ball's already in the air. They don't know if it's coming to their receiver they're covering or not. You just simply, you know, when the ball hits the hands of Sam Shields, you shrug your shoulders and you be glad that he broke up the pass, which he did how many times? Arguably three times. Two, you know, were absolutely right in his hands. You understand that. But you don't hold it against Sam Shields for dropping the football. You wish he caught it, but you don't hold it against him for dropping it. You know, that's how you got to look at, you know, defensive backs through that lens, I think. You know, because there's so many reasons why, you know, there's this whole argument out there. Yeah, there's a reason they're defensive backs. Their hands aren't good or whatever. Well, it's not just that. It's all the things I mentioned before about not expecting it, the head being turned, not knowing which way the receiver's going to break. All those things make it so tough for defensive backs to catch the football. But Sam Shields was out there, you know, for him coming back from his concussion, first game in more than a month, misses four consecutive games, comes back, is out there and looks, you know, fantastic. You want to blame Sam Shields? You want to dock him for missing the tackle on Larry Fitzgerald on the 70-yard play in overtime? Go ahead, criticize Sam Shields. He wasn't the only one. There was about five guys who missed tackles on that play. But no doubt about it, I can't argue against that. He missed it. I can't cover that up. There's no way to do that. It was a black mark in an otherwise good game for Sam Shields. In fact, Sam Shields, your top graded player by Pro Football Focus, by the way, after this game, received the top grade of any player wearing green and gold on Saturday. And it's unfortunate he missed the tackle, but he did a great, great job, shut down type of cornerback that day. Your couch hit performers, who do you blame for this game? Well, linebacker Mike Neal, I thought. Here we are. Here's a guy who comes up big in the wild card round of the playoff. Mike Neal coming up with two sacks. You're like, oh man, Mike Neal, you know, where did you come from? Fantastic job. Keep it up. And it wasn't kept up. You could argue Mike Neal did a good job in run support, setting a hard edge, things like that. Most of the team did well in run support on Saturday. The pass rush was absolutely absent, and the most critical part of the game, Mike Neal has Carson Palmer basically dead to rights, gets a hand on him on that 70-yard touchdown pass to Larry Fitzgerald and he falls out of his grasp. Albeit there was a blocker there near Mike Neal, but it's a play he should have made and did not make. And there were several points throughout the course of that game where I thought, boy, Mike Neal is getting upfield maybe too much. It happened right before halftime on a run by David Johnson. It happened arguably on the overtime touchdown play, the 5-yard pass to Larry Fitzgerald. I don't know about that play. I'd have to know Mike Neal's responsibility on that one. Did he get a little bit too far upfield? Arguably. Regardless, Mike Neal makes zero tackles this game. Zero tackles. I'm just, you know, at some point there's got to be production, and it wasn't there. Was it his worst game ever? Maybe not. But it was good, you know, poor enough to beat the cow chip performances of this game in hindsight. Tim Maste, your other cow chip performer. Tim Maste, interesting year for him. The one which it's tough to quantify sometimes because he ends up having the highest net average of his career. But then you can look at it as if, you know, it was perhaps due to the best punt coverage unit the Packers have maybe ever had in their history. The guys covering had done such a great job that, you know, they allow hardly any return yards. But Tim Maste seemed to misstrike the football on at least two occasions. And you can argue maybe he was trying to keep it away from Patrick Peterson just because of how talented a football player he is, you know, not just as a cornerback, but as a return specialist. But, I mean, Tim Maste did the Packers no favors in the field position game, giving the Cardinals, you know, ideal, you know, field position early in drives for that team. And, you know, it also comes in perfect position conditions, you know, sitting there indoor environment in Arizona, not Lambeau Field, not the frozen tundra, not on the cold and wind. These were poorly hit footballs by Tim Maste this game that, you know, like I said, just did the Packers no favors in the field position game. It was a, you know, arguably Tim Maste's worst game of the season. And, you know, what a time to have your worst game of the season in the biggest game of the season. You know, there's just, it didn't matter that the Packers had good coverage because they were such poor punts. And one of them was actually returned for 12 yards by Patrick Peterson. Ended up being a season low 32 point something net average for Tim Maste. Season low for him. So there are your cow chip performers. You know, it's tough to be so black and white in these things. You know, there was a lot of guys who looked bad for a play or two plays, but they make up for it a lot of times. I tried to choose the guys who look the worst of all when choosing the cow chips and the guys who your blue chips have the fewest, you know, mistakes. So it's tough. It's tough. I mean, there's certainly guys who get beat and make mistakes and end up making up for it. And it's tough sometimes to come up with the chips report. But anyway, there it is, your cow chips in a nutshell. One other thing I really wanted to look at a little bit in this game was some comments by Packers linebacker Clay Matthews in the aftermath of the football game. Basically saying that thinks that there should be college overtime rules. And I thought that Clay Matthews actually did it in a pretty eloquent fashion, considering he was upset in the aftermath of the loss. These comments coming, you know, just moments after the game ended. And basically, you know, took responsibility, accepted that the Packers didn't do the job under the rules that are currently placed in the NFL that determine overtime, that govern overtime. The Packers had a chance. They could have stopped Arizona, forced a punt, and the Packers could have gotten possession of the football, score either a field goal or a touchdown to win the game. And Matthews did seem to accept that, but thought there should be college overtime rules in which, you know, both teams equally gain possession of the football. Personally, you know, I've had this discussion before, and there is maybe no perfect overtime rules to govern the game of football. those against the college overtime, you know, those who argue against it will say it's superfluous. I mean, you're giving teams both possession of the football at the 25-yard line. It's not an accurate reflection of the game of football because that nobody you don't gain possession at the 25-yard line in regulation. Also, the special teams is taken out of the game. There are no kicks. There are no punts. Whereas in the NFL overtime, there is a kickoff and there can be punts. If you get a stop and force the team to punt it. It's perhaps not the greatest thing I'm going to rally against, of all the things out there that you could get upset about. The overtime rules are not high on my list, but if I was commissioner of the NFL, it was my decision. I like the way the college game is set up because it is totally equal in terms of that. One team gets a possession, the other team at least gets to match it, if not do better. Look at it in this way. The Packers, who's the best player on the Packers roster? Quarterback Aaron Rodgers, right? He did touch the football a single time in overtime. How fair is that? That he doesn't even get the opportunity to touch the football. That to me just is not fair. That itself was based on a coin flip. Yeah, the Cardinals go down and they score a touchdown, meaning the Packers would have to score a touchdown. They can't settle for a field goal and maybe they don't get it, but they at least deserve that opportunity. I think equal. That is equaling the playing field. You know, if the Packers can do it, great. If they can't, well, then you know you can't make any complaints. The Cardinals deserve to win. I just think there's an unfairness there, and you can argue all you want about bring up about the weird coin flip, how it didn't flip whatsoever, which was odd. Just when you think you've seen everything in football, you haven't. Perhaps that should be a lesson learned. You know, I think I'll be 90 years old watching this game, and things will come up. They'll be like, man, I've never seen that before. But I digress. I like college overtime rules. I think that's the way it should be in the NFL. I understand. I accept the Packers did not, you know, win this game. It's not sour grapes for me. I accept that they lost in this overtime, but I like the college overtime better. I'd like to see that. I just think it's more fair. The Cardinals get possession of the football. They score the touchdown. Game over. Packers don't even have a chance. I would have it, you know, if it was me, I would do it differently. There's 5 zillion things we could, you know, talk about in this game. I think 5 zillion things we could talk about now in the aftermath of the game, in terms of where did the Packers go from here? Are there going to be any coaching changes? Where do we go in the NFL draft? What positions do we target? What are the weakest and the strongest, positions of depth on the Packers roster? These are all discussions we will get to in the coming weeks. For today, it was an analysis of the final game of the season. So, enjoy it, folks. But I'll tell you this, here's your short segment.
The day ahead.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers today, this Monday, it's basically the 2015 season comes to a close. In fact, as we speak, I know reporters are in the locker room at Lambeau Field currently. The last open locker room availability of the season as the players clean out their lockers today. Over the course of today, tomorrow, I know they'll be doing exit interviews with the coaching staff. But yeah, you'll be reading articles today from those covering the Packers beat, talking to the players for the last time. And then 5 p.m. Central Time today on Monday, head coach Mike McCarthy has his season-ending press conference, followed by the coordinators. I don't think the position coaches will be talking. All this information came from, you know, following the guys on the Packers beat, sharing this information on Twitter. That's what's happening today. And that kind of brings the season to a close. We're not going to hear from Mike McCarthy for probably a month, probably till the NFL Combine after today. So soak it in, I guess, because Packers news is going to dwindle to a crawl. You're going to read lots of analysis from writers and columnists in the upcoming days and weeks. But as far as actual news, updates, things like that, it's, you know, there will be some, but there won't be much until the NFL Combine comes for sure. So things, like I said, are going to slow to a crawl in the world of the Green Bay Packers. And this will kind of put a cap on the season today on Monday. And that'll do it for today's episode of Railbird Central. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us this morning. Thank you for joining me all season long. I appreciate your listenership and your commitment, your dedication to this show. I don't know if that's the way to put it, but I appreciate all of you who've listened in over the course of the days and weeks and months. And this show doesn't end. We'll be back again on Wednesday, every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 8:30 a.m. Central Time. There is no off season as far as I'm concerned. We'll continue our analysis. We'll look forward to the draft, in-depth draft stuff, as usual. It was a roller coaster ride of a season. I hope you enjoyed some of it. A lot of ups, a lot of downs. And perhaps that in a way itself makes it fun. We'll see you, folks. Have a good one. My call to action, as usual, as always, if you've not done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a rating or review on iTunes. The show is free of charge, no subscription, no paywall. It's the one small thing we ask in return. If you did that, we'd love it. But hey, have a good Monday. We'll see you later. I leave you today with a song called Barstool by the String Cheese Incident on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.
But I guess I have been drinking, and I probably shouldn't call you late at night just to listen to your voice.